Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We do appreciate your amazing and continued success. And speaking of Iconic, they wanted me to let you know that if you are interested in trying out their service for 10 days, you can do so. There's going to be a link in the description. You can click on that. You can see everything that they're building over there. They've been nice enough to give Macroaggressions a home since the beginning of our show, really since the beginning of Iconic itself. So if you're interested in checking out what I describe as being sort of like the Netflix of the alternative media, check that link. Go over and see what's cooking on Iconic. They're doing they're making their own movies, they're making their own series, nightly shows, all kind of everything. There's a lot happening over at Iconic, but if you want to try it before you buy it, click that link and do so. Also, thanks to our sponsors, My Patriot Supply. They've been nice enough to build us out a landing page, preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can click there and go to the website, and they'll save you some money on a 4-week supply of food, on a 3-month supply of food. They have seeds available. They have air purification, water purification. They've got camping gear, whatever you need to deal with the apocalypse that we hope is not coming. But my goodness, and these supply chain issues are no joke. We've been talking about them for a while. This is one of those situations where you want to be, you know, you're better off being a month or two early than a day or two late. So let's be proactive. Let's think about this strategically. If you're not interested in using my sponsor, that's totally fine too. Just go next time you're at the store, buy some extra food, start to put it away, start to think about things, well, in a little different way. You like this crazy content that we put out there? We're talking about unusual things. Well, some of the things we're talking about is what we see on the horizon. And unfortunately, it's not always a good thing. So if you want to get prepared in advance, you can get started at the website, preparewithmacroaggressions.com, and save yourself a little bit of money. Also, thanks to C60 Purple Power. They've been the best. They're making the greatest C60 product out there. It is the most powerful antioxidant known. It is several hundred times more powerful than the conventional antioxidants. It helps to boost the efficiency of your cells, and it may also provide cellular protection against many toxic environmental factors. You can go to shopc60.com, use the promo code MACRO on your way out, but I would suggest reading up about it as much as you can to find out what a free radical sponge is and why you probably need that inside your body. shopc60.com, promo code MACRO. All the links will be in the description. You don't have to write it down. You can just click on it. So Well, I'll tell you what, I've been very excited. I'm excited about our guest because I have multiple people in my little universe telling me you got to have Janet Phelan on because she's going to talk to you about some really important things, and you're going to, and she's going to do it in a nice way that makes it seem she's going to be all sweet about it. But you know, the problem is the information itself is so serious and so important and so impactful that I think it's really important that we take a step back, we analyze the situation, we get honest about the world that we're living in. And I think Janet's new book, At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. What a perfect name for what we're experiencing. Janet, nice to meet you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for having me on, Charlie.
Well, thanks for being on. What's that?
I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, me too, because you're talking about the things, you're writing about the things, both in your books and in the articles that you write, that I have been reading for years and years on Activist Post. Shout out to Activist Post for the great work that they do. You've been right over the target with this. You accurately and honestly and objectively see it coming. I never get the feeling that you're trying to scare us about it, but I think that the information is scary. So, I mean, you can't help but sort of get into that. Talk to us a little bit about how this book or why this book came about. I think it's really important, the angle that you are going after with regards to the COVID pandemic and the overlap that we see in the bioweapons industries and what's going on. Now, early on, if you'd written this book on day one of the pandemic, they would have yanked it off of Amazon. They would have called you an unhinged conspiracy theorist, and they would have mocked you. And then all of those things that you were talking about would have been proven true, like it is so far this year. So how'd you get started on this book?
Right. When the pandemic first hit, when it was first announced, I became very aware that this was not being reported in context by the media. It was like, oh my gosh, somebody ate a sick bat in Wuhan, and now the whole world is at risk. And actually, I've been covering biological weapons for about 20 years now, and nothing could be further from the truth in terms of the context. The context being that there were multiple efforts by the United States and her cronies to mitigate any legal culpability that might be enacted or through the deployment of a biological weapon or a pandemic. And really, how do we know what is a biological weapon or what is a pandemic? We know because of what we're told. So I felt that the reporting on this issue was extremely suspect. And I felt that it was important to put together something very quickly to provide more context and more direction in terms of people's understanding, because people were back then and still are kind of floundering around trying to understand what has happened. And I think the book makes some things quite a bit clearer.
Yeah. Well, look, we've all been forced to become epidemiologists over the last 2 years. We've been forced to know more about bioweapons and bats and all of this stuff than we ever signed up for. But it became pretty obvious early on that the media, my number one enemy is the mainstream corporate press, and so I wasn't surprised that they were doing their thing. But they did what they always do, which is take something, take talking points given to them by people above them, breathlessly regurgitate them, and then challenge anybody that questions their narrative. They call them conspiracy theorists and try to hang them out to dry. But even I think even the mo- you know even for those of us that don't have a background in bioweapons or media lies or things like that, even the normie people start early on were like, is this a real thing? It didn't seem very the story seemed very suspect. The, you know, just a bat in a wet market and everything. You know, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt to my best friend who comes back with that story because I like him and trust him and whatever. But when the mainstream media and the United States government come up with a very serious scenario and the best story they can come up with is that a bat got sick and bit somebody and then it spread that way, it seemed like they weren't sending their best and brightest to this. But for such an important event like this, why was the story from the beginning so unbelievable?
You know, I think that those who are pulling the strings don't have a lot of respect for our intelligence. There were a number of unbelievable things about how this rolled out. Also, I found rather unbelievable that all this focus was given on the importance of taking an entirely new type of and virtually untested vaccine. Now, if we're in a pandemic, if we're in a real pandemic scenario, why are they not relying on technology that they claim, you know, has been tried and true and tested? But no, they're going to roll out something entirely new. That in itself is of concern. So there were a number of things that really didn't hold water here.
Well, ivermectin brought up for a lot of people, I thought that was very revealing. That when people questioned the narrative and said, "Well, what about this ivermectin stuff?" It was shut down immediately. You weren't allowed to discuss anything. And I thought, "Well, this is an interesting way to deal with a pandemic, such a deadly pandemic that we're all going to die. And if we can save just one person, Janet, you know, really, if we can just save one person, well, what about ivermectin? No, can't talk about. I thought it was about saving just one person." Can't talk about the ivermectin that's been around for, you know, years and years and years, and the scientists won the Nobel Prize and all that stuff. We can't talk. So I think to a lot of people, they got that same feeling you did, which is this seems a little fishy. If we're in the middle of a pandemic, then we're gonna try out the new technology. Like, okay, maybe, but in the meantime, while we're waiting for the new technology, can we please try the old stuff that we've been using? And when they shut that down and didn't provide any sort of reminder of, hey, look, in the absence of this new rush to market vaccine that we're putting together, mm-hmm. please take better care of yourself, drink a lot of water, get exercise, eat healthy, work out, get sunlight. We never heard any of that. All we heard was hang tight, stay in your hole until the experimental magical vaccine gets here. So wasn't that like the first indicator that maybe we were being lied to by these people?
It was a big red flag. Yeah. I'm currently in a part of the world. I'm in Chiapas, Mexico, and Chiapas has a history of, rebellion. The Zapatista uprising took place here in San Cristobal back in the 90s. And people generally in Chiapas, the locals tend to have some suspicions about what their government tells them. And what I found out initially here was that, because I would talk to everybody, I'd be in a taxi, I'd be on a bus, you know, I just want to hear what everybody has to say. And I was hearing the same thing, which is that, my uncle got COVID and he stayed home and took some herbal tea because we don't want to go to the hospital because you go to the hospital with COVID and you're not coming out.
Right.
And this is what I heard. And I have talked to so many people now who believe that either were told or simply believe from the symptomatology that they had COVID and they stayed home and took their herbs and they're fine. And others who got scared, you know, not being able to breathe is a scary sort of a symptom, you know, who went to the hospital, didn't do so well. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And have you been in Mexico for the whole?
Yes.
the whole thing. And it's from the people I know in Mexico. Mexico has been the place to be, actually, as opposed to some other places. So you might, you feel like you picked the right spot?
Oh, I feel that I sort of miraculously stumbled not only on the right country, but also on the right state. Yeah.
Great. Now, everybody that listens to this is now looking up real estate brokers in Chiapas. So they're ready.
Oh, well, there's been a first wave already. We call them COVID refugees. They call themselves COVID refugees. Wow. And they're coming from Israel, France, Germany, Canada, the U.S., because they believe that their health freedom rights are more honored and intact here.
But hang on a second. How can that be? I was told by my nightly news that everybody in Mexico are murderers and rapists and mostly maybe some nice people there. How can this possibly be, Janet, that there's actually nice people in Mexico that have it all figured out? This is the power of the media, is it not?
The media has been tarring Mexico with a very black brush for some time now. I'm not saying there aren't problems.
No, of course
not. But I personally feel a lot safer here than I felt in the U.S.
Yeah, it's a shame. But, you know, the U.S. has brought this on themselves. We are involved in a variety of things. Most of them not very good. I'm curious about this. Back to COVID just for a second in terms of the origins. Okay, we knew the bat story was fishy. None of that made any sense. Those of us that had an understanding of who the U.S. is, you know, who our government really is and what we do, we weren't falling for this. But we knew there had to be a different story to it. We go down the rabbit hole. We start to find these connections to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And we quite rightly have questions about that. Anyone that studies that starts to find these unusual connections to Fauci, Ralph Baric, which starts to lead us backwards, back to the U.S. And in my world, it leads us to some questions about some weapons laboratories. Fort Detrick is one. Galveston National Laboratory is one I have questions about. Did you find connections in Wuhan to any of these U.S. military weapons labs, or was this purely like a private partnership between the Fauci crew and the Wuhan, or was there some sort of governmental involvement?
Well, the first of all, Fauci is governmental. So, and there were connections to labs in North Carolina and elsewhere. My particular focus, I became rather entranced with the dance the U.S. was doing, which started shortly after 9/11 in order to make sure that there would be no culpability whatsoever should the U.S. be involved in biological weapons misconduct. And one of the first big red flags to me, I was actually in the green room at KPFK in Los Angeles, so waiting to do a radio show in 2004 on biological weapons. And I was scrolling through the Patriot Act, because I just had a feeling there was something there that I hadn't seen. And I happened upon Section 817, which is the expansion of the biological weapons statute, and my eyes almost fell out of my head. What it states is that the U.S., it goes through what the prohibitions are. You can't develop, stockpile, deploy, you know, this is, you go to prison in the U.S. if you do this with biological weapons, except if the U.S. government authorizes it. So the U.S. gave itself immunity, legal immunity, for violating its own biological weapons law. And there are implications to this that far exceed simply domestic law. There are international implications in terms of compliance with the international treaty known as the Biological Weapons Convention. And so that was my first rabbit hole. When I went down that, things started to kind of explode in terms of what I saw the U.S. doing. And people have said to me, well, it's not just the U.S., this is a worldwide. Yes, it is. It's a worldwide global phenomenon. And the U.S. is the leader of the free world.
Right.
And I think as the self-appointed titular sort of leader, the U.S. has certain responsibilities and obligations and also impetus here. So,
well, they gave themselves a waiver for any sort of misconduct. Did they give anyone else a waiver?
They gave themselves a waiver. And that's where it began to get interesting to me, because I actually traveled to Geneva, Switzerland twice to attend and also engage with the Biological Weapons Convention. I was allowed to testify twice in 2011 and again in 2016. And one of the first things I wanted to ascertain was whether or not the U.S. had reported this rather dramatic change in domestic law to the convention, because under, sorry, I've got a bit of a cold bit, I call it, under the terms of the convention, the U.S. and all other state parties are mandated to report any changes in domestic law to the convention at large. So one of the first things I determined was that the U.S. failed to report this. Now, that's interesting. I had a conversation with one of the lead delegates from the State Department at that convention. His name is Chris Park, and he's a very, very nice person. He's just exudes friendliness and warmth, and you know, he's the kind of guy that you'd really like to have on your team. And so I wanted to find out from him, you know, what happened here. And he said, oh, good golly, gee whiz, it was an oversight. He's so sweet and so convincing. Right. And he was actually not very truthful to me. And I found out later in the convention, the U.S. had hosted a side event, and a representative from the Department of Homeland Security named Daniel Gerstein Dr. Daniel Gerstein was presenting to the delegates in the side event on how vibrant and vital and important the U.S.'s domestic legislation about biological weapons is. And he put it up on a PowerPoint presentation. But it was the prior law that had been amended by 817. There was no mention of any sort of waiver, free pass given to the U.S. And at that point, it became clear to me that there was a studied effort to deceive the convention.
But nobody's fooled. Everybody knows the U.S. is driving the policy of creating biological weapons and things like that. So we know everybody, that's not a secret, but the waiver remained a secret, right? So they just did not want the rest of the world to realize that. And it took you to remind let them know at the panel in Geneva that was that was the thing. What was their response, or what was the broader community's response to finding out about this? Or did they find out?
Well, you know, my hand went up. You know, excuse me, Dr. Gerstein, I have a question. You know, you're this nice law you have up here doesn't mention, and I read off. And he's like scratching his head. Well, I'll have to check into that. And I also asked another question, because at that point in time, I had some input from some military personnel that some of these weapons, illegal weapons of mass destruction, were being stockpiled at Sierra Army Depot in California. So I asked Dr. Gerstein about that. He denied the existence of Sierra Army Depot. Oh, we have no such military base. I mean, anybody who has access to Google can. So You know, it was a very interesting experience for me. Shortly thereafter, I was approached by a couple of the delegates from Team USA, from the State Department, which sends about 20 delegates to these conventions. And they approached me and they said, we were going into another side event where the U.S. was going to be again doing a presentation. And they said, excuse me, Ms. Phelan, we want to talk to you about the kind of questions we're asking. So I thought that was just amazing. So I refused to talk with them. I said, well, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. You want to talk to me as a member of the press about what I'm asking? So I don't think that's going to work out. So I walked away. So there were other questions tendered at this next event. And actually, the event that I was going into was hosted by members of Health and Human Services. And also, there was at least one doctor from the CDC. And very shortly before the convention convened, there was an article that had appeared in the Associated Press, of all places, discussing how there were now triage plans being put into effect in the event of a pandemic, discussing who they're going to let die. So who will be allocated the scarce resources and who are we going to shuffle off into the graveyard? So this article was rather shocking, and I wanted to ask the doctors with HHS and CDC something about this, and they again denied that such plans existed. They were not only published in the Associated Press. The Associated Press referred to an article in a well-respected medical journal that had gone through this triage plan as well. So, I think the general MO that I was running into was, when in doubt, deny everything.
Wow. Well, do they try to deny the existence of Dark Winter? Do they try to deny the existence of these simulations that are simulating terrorist outbreaks, and then they wind up happening exactly like they simulated? I mean, did that ever come up, the Dark Winter simulation, during your 2011 and 2016 meetings with these people?
I was not even aware of Dark Winter at that time. I think it happened later, didn't it? I'm not sure, but I didn't bring it up. It was like, I felt like Alice in Wonderland, it was just an amazing experience. I'm so glad that I decided to make these two trips, and because the experience was life-changing and has really informed and helped to manifest the kinds of journalism I'm doing now.
Which is really important journalism. I wish you weren't having to do it. I wish that we could be talking about a totally different subject, because the idea of bioweapons is terrifying. And especially in the context of what we've been living through over the last 2 years, where you can see that if you get the media working in concert with one another in conjunction with the American government, and you put a figurehead at the front and you scare the population the right amount, you can get away with murder, mass murder, and almost get no questions asked. I wonder, in your opinion, after watching, knowing what you knew going into this, that they were planning for, they'd made decisions on who lives and who dies and that sort of thing. Now, looking back on the first 2 years of this operation, and let's just assume that it's going to continue in some form or fashion beyond this date, how would you grade the COVID operation that they've run? Because it seems to me like they've been effective in some areas and they've been very ineffective in others. And I'm just wondering, based on what you sat through in these meetings that they're talking about these possibilities, I wonder what you think, if they've done a good job with this or if they've dropped the ball.
Well, you know, I think this is a kind of a scary and horrible thing to say, but I think to some degree, has been a test run. I think they wanted to, you know, see what kind of compliance they got. And so, I mean, really, we have a less than 1% case fatality rate. This is hardly the plague. I think they seized upon this event or possibly manufactured this event in order to kind of do a dry run and test certain policies and see what sort of compliance they got. As of today, I think there's been about, according to the WHO, there's been about 6 million deaths worldwide. I believe there have been, if I remember the figure correctly, over 10 billion vaccines distributed, deployed. But see, I don't think we've seen anything yet. I think that we have entered an arena where certain things may continue to happen and may happen in ways that rather far exceed what we're experiencing so far. I hate to say that, but I do think so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we know that they take a long-term approach to these things, and we may in our own daily lives budget a couple weeks, couple months out, maybe a couple years out. We know they take a multi-generational approach to this, like decades out. So I'm wondering if, like you said, that it would make sense that this was sort of the first, the dry run, like, all right, let's see what we, you know, we've got a disposable guy in Fauci, we can get rid of him, and we've got some of these other people that they're all replaceable, but the core stays intact. That's the CDC, the media, the White House, that the importance of that, regardless of which person comes and goes, we've seen the use of that. Do you think that they use this as a test run just to try and see what kind of biological experiments they can run on us at this time, because everyone's got a different version of COVID. Some people are like, well, I got it and I couldn't taste anything for a month, or I got it and I couldn't smell anything. And other people are like, it's down for a day, I felt bad, but I'm fine. And other people wound up in the hospital on ventilators and then they were dead. So was this COVID version one, or was this 8 different versions of COVID released all at the same time?
Well, you know, people do have individual responses to a germ agent. You know, my sense of things is that they were testing certain policies to see the level of compliance, you know, how far they could push things. And I think we're in for a wild ride, I think.
Yeah. So you get this. Okay. So in the fog of war, let's say we're in it now, or 2020, 2021, definitely in it. Rules kind of go out the window and things happen, and laws get broken. New laws get created. Would anything jump out at you during this last 2-year period that they manipulated with the legal system that made you go, whoa, I got a really bad feel? You talked about granting themselves immunity, but other things like that. Were there any red flags that you saw, like with regard to, obviously the pharmaceutical industry was granted a shield, but that they had that in 1986. So it wasn't necessarily new. We saw the use of the emergency use authorization as a tool to sort of just blow regulations out of the way and just fast track everything. Like, were there aspects of this that you saw that made you nervous, not just for now, but like you said, for the future?
Well, you know, I can answer that. We get into some really sort of scarier parts of my research. For example, this there are other There are a couple of other delivery systems that can be deployed in a pandemic scenario, which have nothing to do with a possible disease agent and have nothing to do with a vaccine. And in order for effective deployment of the two delivery systems that I talk about in the book to other delivery systems, one would be greatly facilitated in a lockdown scenario, and the other would be very facilitated in a, you know, any sort of pandemic illness scenario where people have to rely on taking drugs from doctors, pharmacies, whatever. And I have been, you know, it's a very difficult issue for me to try to present, because I am really presenting information in regards to these two delivery systems that simply are not available elsewhere. And because of this, I think people right now are sort of fixated on illness and vaccines. And to introduce two other potential threats, I think has possibly overwhelmed or confused people. But I believe one of those delivery systems is so well documented in the book that I believe is pretty much irrefutable. The other one, I'm still working on further documentation, but I felt that it was important to bring it up. And that other one has to do with the existence of imposter pharmaceuticals, doppelganger pharmaceuticals. We know from history, as well as all our spy movies and spy novels, that the USSR had developed and maintained a cache, so to speak, of imposter pharmaceuticals. So if they had a dissident or even a diplomat, somebody they wanted to get rid of who was becoming inconvenient, mm-hmm. Oh, here's your heart medicine, here's your testosterone, here's your antibiotic, you know, this is what you take, here it is, take it, and the person will die. And that's an imposter pharmaceutical. What I think we're not aware of, which I am trying to make people aware of, is that the U.S. now has, in conjunction with pharmaceutical companies, developed similar sorts of pills and agents. And I, on information and belief, I think that these have been deployed heavily in nursing homes. So, you know, people, you know, they're running towards the end of their Medicaid coverage or something, and you know they just can't extract any more money from them. And it's like, here's your pill, you know. And there was at least one case which I was following very, very closely, which involved a gentleman named Charles Castle in California, where there appears to be evidence that this is what happened to him. So this is one of the delivery systems. I mean, these are not pleasant things to talk about. And these, you know, and these are also very difficult to deal with. I mean, how presented with this information, what do you do? Do you not go to the pharmacy anymore? Do you not go to the doctors anymore? I mean, what, you know, it puts your whole world on tilt.
Yeah.
So, I tried as dispassionately and professionally as possible to provide, you know, certain documentation in the book. And I can only hope that people will, you know, become aware that the situation is more complex than illness and vaccines.
So. Yeah, for sure. Well, we've talked about, on my show, we've talked about a lot of this stuff. We've talked about Agenda 21, we've talked about depopulation. We've talked, you know, it's tempting for the normies out there to go, oh, get out of there here with your depopulation stuff. And you go, listen, I know it sounds crazy, But a lot of things sound crazy, and they're real, and this is one of them. And the depopulation component can't be overlooked. I mean, you can overlook it, but you do so at your own peril. And if you do that, if you overlook it, you are missing a component of this. And when we started seeing people getting pushed in, you know, forced into nursing homes, we started seeing certain types of medicine prohibited and others promoted, remdesivir and things like this. We started to go, what is going on here? But my conspiratorial mind first went to, it's a money thing. Okay. Like my thing went, okay, we'll get them in the nursing homes and then give them this medicine because this medicine's super expensive and everything. But then I started to say, wait a second. This is much bigger than that. This isn't even necessarily about the money. They've got all the money in that they need. This is about depopulation. This is about not having to pay people towards the tail end of their lives Social Security. Now, it might not matter if it's a couple people getting a couple doses of remdesivir, but if it's a culturally accepted thing, then you start to thin the herd at the higher age range, and that has an effect. Oh, these people aren't working anymore. They're not, quote, contributing to society. They're going to be a drain on, like, all the psychotic hallucinations that these people in positions of power have. They come forward in times like this because it's a great cover for them to enact all of this. So I recognize that what you're saying is dangerous and horrifying, and you don't want to scare people, but we've been down this path. The audience understands that I talk about this stuff not out of a need or a desire to scare them, because I'm certainly not trying to scare them, but it's just scary. It's very real, and it happens to also be scary. But you mentioned there was another thing that you besides imposter pharmaceuticals, what's the—
Yeah, there is another delivery system which would best be deployed in terms of in a lockdown scenario. And the book goes into this in some depth. And I was able to get this documented to a degree that I think makes it fairly irrefutable. So, yeah, there are other things to worry about. You know, this thing about scaring people. I did an ambush interview. I was on KSKQ in Ashland, Oregon recently, which actually about 10 years ago, I had my own radio show when I was still living in Oregon. I had my own radio show on KSKQ, and I figured they'd be interested in, you know, in interviewing a former broadcaster, and it ended up being a total ambush interview. And at one point, the interviewer said, kind of shrieked at me, "What are you trying to do? Scare people?" You know, actually, I mean, no, you know, it's a very simple thing. You're standing on a street corner, and a Mack truck is heading right at you, but you're looking the other way. So somebody says, "Hey, watch out, there's a truck over there." And that's basically all I'm trying to do, right? You know, because I do believe that we can survive these deployments if we're aware of where the real threats are coming from.
Right.
And so what I'm trying to do is to alert people to the existence of these other threats.
That's how I see it too. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm trying to inform people. If I'll inform you about the good stuff too. When I get the good stuff, I'll talk about that. And when I get the scary stuff, I'll talk about that too. But I don't want to pretend like the audience can't handle it, and I don't want to go, you know, not level with them about what we really see. And sometimes we have to just be honest about it. And sometimes what we see is some really bad things happening. But I always try to put a positive spin on it if I can, because I feel like the first step towards breaking through this or defeating people that think like this is to at least acknowledge that we have a problem, acknowledge that this stuff exists. I mean, you're not going to be able to stop imposter pharmaceuticals if you don't know that there's even such a thing. So like the first step is understanding, hey, there's a concept out there that you might want to understand. Doesn't mean you have to dwell on it. Doesn't mean you have to obsess or go home and say, oh, I'm selling the house, I'm moving, and we're all going to die. Nobody has to, we don't have to do that. But an understanding, just to being honest about where we are and what we see, I think that's helpful. It's funny that the person yelled at you for trying to scare them. Like, hello, what does the mainstream media do 24/7? All they're trying to do is scare everyone. Oh, all of a sudden you've got a problem with Janet. Janet's trying to scare you and you're worried about the company.
You know, the way I see things is we have two imperatives. The first thing is we have to survive these bastards, okay?
Yeah.
The second thing is we've got to figure out another form of governance where we don't end up being governed by psychopathic bastards.
Yes.
So really two imperatives here. And I think that the kind of journalism that I'm doing and you're doing basically addresses both things. Because I truly believe that the truth will set us free. And we have to be, you know, we have to look into the abyss fearlessly and thoroughly. And, you know, in so doing, we will find the strength that we need in order to overcome this. I do believe this.
I do too. I do too. I really do. I want to shower as many people as I can with information and let them start thinking about it too. I don't have it all figured out. I know you don't have it all figured out, but collectively, somebody else is going to hear about this and they're going to say, you know, I know this guy who works in this place, you know, and something's going to happen. So the more we get that out, I'm wondering though about these delivery systems. Speaking of like getting destroyed in the media by as being like alarmist tinfoil hatters. A lot of people for the last couple of decades have been talking about chemtrails. They've been talking about atmospheric aerosol injections, right? So everybody was crazy. None of this was happening. And then John Brennan goes in front of a House subcommittee and panel and talks about it and says, yeah, CIA has been running this. We've been doing this for a while. It's called atmospheric aerosol injection program. And yeah, we've been running it. So everyone, all of a sudden it's like, where are my apologies? Where are my apologies? Is that a delivery system for this? Is that a potential delivery system for getting people introduced to a pandemic? Or is there some sort of chemistry behind it that just doesn't add up where it says, no, it rains down on you, but it doesn't get in your skin the right way? Is there, I mean, I don't understand the science.
Well, it does. I mean, it actually, some of what they're doing in terms of chemtrails, I'm not an expert on this, but this is simply the deployment of reason. Okay, if there is a permanence to these aerosolized agents, because what happens is they go into basically the aquifers, they go into the water, and then they are recycled sort of endlessly. And I mean, it's not like somebody sprays overhead and then it's gone. No, it stays. So, you know, I think that there's something else that has recently come into our awareness that was a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. And that was, you know, the fact that people are claiming that they're being attacked by directed energy weapons and microwave weapons.
Right.
And it's very easy to dismiss these claims as, you know, a form of personal neurosis or psychosis or you know, somebody's like hysteria, right? So now we have this thing called the Havana syndrome, and there's actually been legislation passed by Congress to help diplomats who are being victimized by these weapons, not citizens.
Right. They don't care about us.
The government. So de facto now there is a public, you know, admission that that these weapons exist. So, you know, I am heartened actually by this admission. You know, people need to keep pushing the envelope. They need to keep moving their own claims forward. But there's so much coming out now, and it's a hopeful sign.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we just saw it in Australia, where the people were protesting and getting sound cannons were being aimed at them. Their lips were bubbling up, and they were saying, "I'm hit with directed energy. And here's the proof on my face. You know, I'm having reactions to it." And I remember the old days when it was like, you people are just smoking crack and you're having mental breaks and everything. It's like, yeah, okay, fine. I'm sure some people are smoking crack and having mental breaks. Whatever. Yes. But that's not the explanation for this. There's plenty of sane people that are experiencing this and having very real documented effects of directed energy weapons. And this is a thing. It's not debatable. So I wonder, is that a process by which you can either deliver pandemic type a pandemic, or is it just that it destroys your defense system and therefore then a pandemic comes in afterwards and wipes you out because your immune system has been reduced by directed
energy? That is a very good question. You know, I have to say, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a biologist. My viewpoint here and what I've been writing and trying to promulgate in my articles and in my book is more a sort of nuts and bolts legal perspective, mm-hmm. as to what happened, you know, in the legal arena to enable a pandemic. There have been a lot of statements made concerning COVID being delivered by 5G. I don't know about that. But what I do think is exactly what you said, that microwave directed energy weapons weaken the immune system and can very likely, in so doing, you know, create more vulnerability to illness and disease. There's also concerns by those in the electrosensitive community, however you want to, targeted individual community, however you want to term it, that possibly these weapons are impacting people's ability to think critically, so that CNN tells you, you know, blah, 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 and you go, yeah, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So you don't stand back and, but wait a second, that doesn't make any sense. So there are a lot of possible implications to the use of these weapons at this point in time.
It's terrifying. Because you know that...
5G robot. I do want to say that. So,
well, we turn on the TV, or if you've got a TV, and for those that are, you know, that put on, let's say, the news, and you mentioned CNN, and the television itself is putting you in this weird vibrational state. CNN itself is using tones and flashes and things like this that also trigger things in your mind. Breaking news, dun dun, you know, with the big sound, and you're like, oh my God, it's really important. And they're in our brains already. You take that, then you add a directed energy weapon component to this, which is already putting people in a hyper suggestible mind state. How do we even go up against that? That's unfair to us. They are targeting our brains and we don't even know it.
Yeah. Well, it's a big issue. And, you know, I simply have no answers to some of these weapons are so venal and so sneaky and surreptitious that one wonders, you know, what kind of individuals, you know, with what moral standards would ever even stoop to use these kinds of weapons. And all, you know, all I can hope for is that people will be aware of their existence and can take certain kinds of steps to protect themselves. For example, there are areas in the world, Green Bank, Virginia, I believe, where there is no Wi-Fi. You know, they can't, it's sort of like an electrosensitive free zone. So, you know, there are options out there. One has to start to research them.
Yeah. And so we talk about the chemical inundation our body has been under for a long time now. It goes back to, if people talk about, well, I don't know if CNN's actually going to control your mind. Okay, fine. Maybe they're not going to control your mind, but we do know about the effects of fluoride. We know that it has been added to the water supply for a very long time. We know the story behind it. We know the reasons behind it. It's not for your teeth. That is a chemical that has been used to systematically dumb down the population. Now, does that mean that it makes them believe everything that's on CNN? No, but it does put them in a position where they might be more inclined. And in combination with other chemicals or other technologies or tactics, it creates a beneficial place for mind control to happen. You've done a lot of work with regard to water, right? You Flint, Michigan. Yes. You've been deeply involved in this. What's the role of our water supply in keeping us down sort of in this malaise?
Well, you know, water is life, and fluoride has definitely, I believe, impacted our ability to think critically. One only has to look at the declining IQ scores,
right,
at the declining SAT scores. Something's happening. Now, in the book, I do go into the existence and the likelihood that water can be used as a selective delivery system for something even more venal than fluoride. And it as you probably know, there's a lot of emphasis in my book on proving the fact that the water system has been reconfigured, that it's been tweaked, and that it does allow for a selective delivery of another sort of agent. So, for example, should, I'm not sure where you are, Charlie, but, you know, should in your city, should someone decide they don't like talk show hosts, they can selectively deliver this other agent through the water system to the talk show host. And I know this sounds like science fiction, and I really encourage people to look at the documentation in the book, because the blueprints are there. The denials from government agents are there. The methods by which certain valves are opened and shut in order to do this is there. So this is, you know, and a situation such as this could be best facilitated in a lockdown scenario. So you're locked in your home, you can't leave. You know, you got to bathe and cook and eat and drink water, and where are you getting the water from? So
they would make a determination based on your geography, that you got certain types of water, as opposed to maybe the rich side of town got the better water, the poor side of town got the water with sterilants in it, maybe something like that.
Sterilants could be anything. I remember when I first was researching this, I was speaking with Dr. Bill Deagle, and he was very, very nervous about what I'd uncovered. He said, they can run anything they want to at Second Life. So, you know, whatever it is they have planned for us in terms of this second line, which they want to deny exists, but abundantly appears in the blueprints. Whatever it is, it's illegal. It's illegal. And we need to be aware that this is the possibility. In order to deploy this selectively, you'd have to have a valve with an RFID address. You don't want to send city crews into your neighborhood digging up your street, you know, at the time of deployment. That's gonna alert you big time. So you're using remote control valves with RFID addresses, which are, I've also got pictures of these, which are included in the book. So it adds another dimension to the scenario and the risk that we now experience. And I just hope that people will, you know, not be overwhelmed by the information, will look at the documentation and make up their minds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Again, we're not trying to scare people. We're just trying to inform people. The idea of what you said. You talked to Dr. Deagle. Is that Deagle from the company Deagle?
No. Okay. Bill Deagle. He had a radio show for quite a long time.
Okay. All right.
I think it was on Genesis. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, because the Deagle Military Industrial Complex Corporation, they have a very bleak projection for the year 2025,
and they've taken it down. I went to look at it the other day, and it's gone.
Oh, it's gone. It was up longer than I thought it was going to be up for, because I remember finding that years ago and thinking this is scary. But then again, I thought, well, so that's years and years from now. That's a million years from now. It'll never get here. And now it's here, and you go, oh, maybe they knew about this. Maybe that's why they're a well-respected military industrial complex company and, you know, not out of business or something. Let's wrap up with this. Are we currently guinea pigs in the largest human experimentation ever conducted on mankind?
Can I quote you? I mean, that's a perfect way of laying this out. Can I plagiarize you? Yes.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I think we are.
Yeah. I mean, so where do we go? It's obviously recognition and understanding of this is the first step. Then what? Is this something that's beyond the court systems? The court systems are rigged and we can't go that way. Is this about just making it so obvious and in everybody's face that they can't deny it anymore? How do we get away from this? Because there's been a lot of people that are convinced that everything they hear on the nightly news is true. And I don't know how to deal with those people except to show them an alternative version of reality that, and hope that works, but I don't expect them to all convert. So how do we do this? How do we collectively let people know that they have unwittingly signed up to become part of the experiment?
I think we do exactly what we're doing. I think we are exactly where we need to be doing exactly what we need to be doing. And I personally feel great sorrow when I, you know, see people just, you know, repeat what mainstream tells them, and they get this glazed over sort of expression in their face when you try to introduce new material. You can't save everybody, but I believe with the appropriate knowledge and information, we can overcome, and we're doing exactly what we need to do.
Well, I'm optimistic. I know that these people are not omnipotent. They're not gods. They might think they are, but they make plenty of mistakes, and they don't have this whole thing all the way figured out. There's still time for us to rise up and beat these maniacs. I think if anyone is interested, where's the best place for them to go to find your work?
I've been writing for Activist Post pretty much for about 10 years. So my personal website has been hacked into pieces. It no longer exists, but you can find my work at activistpost.com.
That's how you know she's doing something right. When you get your website hacked, that's what, you can find the book At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. You can find that on Amazon. You can find that at Trine Day. I'm going to put the link in the description below. Janet, thank you so much. I appreciate all of your amazing and important work.
Thank you so much.
And if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can connect with me at the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, or you can follow me on Twitter. Thanks, everybody.